just say, what is your name, sir? What is your name, sir?
My name is Mustafa Kazim.
Okay, Mr. Lee, I believe that the Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse will serve as your lead accomplice, so just hold on, and the next voice you will hear will be the Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse. Thank you, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Kazim.
Yeah.
Could you please state, restate for the record, your full name and your ABC number?
Mustafa Kazim, 046033.
Thank you, sir. You're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for a 412B hearing, which is parole to a consecutive sentence or absolute discharge this morning. The board members that are participating today in the hearing, if you look to the opposite, it'd be to your right, my left, the opposite end of the bench for me is the Honorable Louis Quinones. Right next to him is the Honorable David Neal. Right next to me in the middle here is the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright, who's the chairman of the board, and my name is Gail Rittenhouse. I'll be your panel chair today. I just want to start with a brief introduction, but I do want to mention that we have two visitors, two supporters for you today. We have your mother, Ms. Brenda, is that right, Simmons? And your sister, Ms. Julia Gillespie, in the room today, sir.
Okay.
So we'll start with a brief summary here. It looks like you became eligible for this, for parole, on March 2nd of 2008. And you're now 58 years old, and you're serving 25 years to life for the crime of murder first degree, and you've got a consecutive sentence of narcotic drug violation of 4.5 years. So this hearing today would be consideration for parole to that consecutive sentence, sir.
Okay,
and the crime occurred on July 31st, 1982, and it looks like you were about 22 years old, is that right, at the time?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
And you were convicted by a plea bargain on October 14th, 1982, and you were sentenced on November 3rd, 1982.
Yes.
And you had a number of expired sentences as well that were possibly concurrent to the other crime. You have 5 armed robberies, and for each of those you receive 21 years. That's expired, that sentence is expired. You have a marijuana violation, which is also expired, for which you receive 1 year, 10 months, and 15 days. You have another expired prison contraband conviction for 3.5 years, expired. And then another narcotic drug for 4.5 years that's expired. Your discipline history is pretty significant. You have 5 majors in 4 years. Why was your prison discipline so? Why did you have so many disciplines, sir, in prison?
Because I had developed a drug problem.
You had a drug problem?
Yes, and that I developed while in prison.
Okay.
And which I have rectified since.
Okay, I see this. I see a number. We have a list printout here, and I see narcotics possession several times, many times. Yeah, I see that now. Okay, but you say you rectified that. How did you do that?
Yes, I have been taking since I've been back, and before I had left, I had took some drug classes, but since I've been back, I've been participating in Narcotic Anonymous and Alcoholic Anonymous.
Okay.
And I've been taking, I've got social awareness workshops, and that's what I've been taking.
Okay.
Social awareness, design for women, numerous certificates here that I've been.
Okay, so let me ask you a question about those, about all the courses you've taken concerning drug or drug treatment or drug education. Which one do you think had the most impact on you?
I think the one that had the most impact is narcotic anonymous and social awareness workshop.
Then why do you say that?
Because it makes me think more about the responsibilities that I have for my, not only for myself, but for my family and my grandkids, my great-grandkids. It's the look that I don't want to give to them. I don't want to give them a bad look like granddads or anything. You don't want to come out of bed with just, oh, don't feed them, whatever. You know, so I don't want them to think of me like that because they don't know me. They haven't had a chance to get to know me. I haven't met them. You know, but I had to sit back and hit rock bottom in order to rise out of the smoke. I had to rise out of Phoenix.
Okay.
I'm trying to rise out of Phoenix, man. I think I've been doing pretty good for myself.
All right, well, that's good. You've been before the board about 20 or so times, it looks like. I didn't count them all up specifically. But it looks like the board has, in the past, put you out in the community on home arrest two different times. One time in April 30th of 2009, and then you wound up being revoked December 23rd of 2009. What happened?
That was because a person that was in my, had the wrong person in my car, and the police pulled me over, and they found something in my car. And that person that was in my car left in my car, but then that person that was in my car said it wasn't theirs. In the process of elimination, he had it was my car, and it happened to be mine.
Okay, so but that wasn't yours. That was not yours.
No, it wasn't.
Okay, and then again, it looks like in July of 2010, this board also granted you home arrest. And that was revoked July of 2012. So you were out for two more years, but that was revoked. What happened that time?
It was pretty much the same story. Wrong person in my car. I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And this person had asked me for a ride. She had said, she had told me that she had never phone charged over some girl's house and asked her which way I was going. And I told her I was going to the west side of Phoenix. She said, can you drop me off pretty close to this woman's house? And I said, yeah. So when I took off to give her a ride, the Capitol Police in Phoenix, they got in back of me. You know what I'm saying? And they turned their lights on me. And while we in the car, the girl told me to be cool. I said, I ain't got no problem. I got lots of registration insurance for my car. You know what I mean? I said, you don't do nothing stupid up this car. And I see her falling into a bag. Next thing I know, she was doing some crack pipe in the backseat of my car. And the police seen her doing the crack pipe in the backseat of my car. And when they came to my car, they come to her side of the car and asked me if they could shake down her side of the car. And I said, for one, they said, look in the backseat. I look in the backseat, it's a crack pipe. I said, oh, why did you do that? He said, you know what? That's what the girl said, you know what? You know exactly what you did. You just cost me. You don't know what you just cost me doing that stupid. I mean,
So what have you learned from that?
I learned to keep people out of my car, that's for sure.
That's for sure, yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah, don't be giving strangers rides, yeah.
You can't give them a ride. You can't be nice. I don't care how high it is. You're going to get the bus.
Okay, so, and it looks like your release plans, your plans that you live with your mother in Levine.
Yes, ma'am.
Is that still okay? That's still accurate? Okay.
Yes.
And I think that's all of the background info. The crime itself was involved in robbery. And it looks like you may have been on probation at the time. Can you just tell us what happened? What was going on the day that that
happened? Mr. Crime?
Yes.
This is what happened. Me and my lady, at the time, we had been smoking. We had been smoking PCP at the time. You know, and I was stressing about something because we had just bought a house over on the south side of Chipman, on the south side of Phoenix,
uh-huh.
on Chipman Street. And I had went to stressing, I guess, about about money, that I put all my money into this house, what am I gonna do for tomorrow? You know what I'm saying? It's a lot of money. So we were smoking that stuff, that Sherman stuff. And I really wasn't a real Sherman smoker, but I had been smoking that stuff. And the next thing I know, you know what I'm saying, I guess, from the time that I was stressing about the finances, it gathered my heat, and I don't remember the crime. I really don't remember the crime because I kind of blacked out. And things took shape, because the girl told me what had happened later on, but after the crime, I didn't really know what happened. And they told me that I had robbed five people, said I killed one guy. I'm like, man. And I've been 3 years, I've been piecing things together. But during the time of that I feel like if I had tried desperately to write the family of Mr. Comey, that's the person that had passed. I had tried to write his family and apologize for what happened without a deal for his family and his kids. But DOC wouldn't let it because they say it's against the rules to contact the victim. Well, they're kind of, you know what I'm saying? So that's been bothering me for years, you know what I'm saying? That's probably why I developed the problem that I had up in here.
What problem is that? Your drug problem?
The drug problem that I developed up in here.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? But I wasn't bad when I was on the street. But when I was a kid, I probably just used to smoke marijuana.
Okay.
Just smoke marijuana.
So the day that you were smoking the PCP, you were stressing about having enough money, but how could you afford the PCP?
Well, my girl had a job, and I had a job at the time also.
But you were trying to save money for your house.
We had already paid for the house. That's where all our money had been into. But we still had some money left over. We didn't use all the money. And so we tried to figure out how we're gonna make this money that we have left work for us.
Okay. I'm just wondering why you would make the decision then to spend more of your money on drugs. But
it wasn't that expensive at the time, but all it took was that one time.
Right.
As
we know now. Okay. Let me see. I thought of something else. And I'm going to ask my fellow board members if they have any questions for you. Does anybody have a question for Mr. Fessel? Dr.
Wright
has a question for you.
Back to the most recent one, where you violated with these females who had drugs in your vehicle. Was this the same female, or was these different females that you were involved with, sir?
They were different
females.
I really didn't even know. Well, the first time it don't matter, I just met that girl. Somebody hooked me up, you know what I'm saying? Because I was out of house arrest. I didn't know nobody. I had been locked up for something like 28 years. And somebody had introduced me to this girl. And I was, you know what I'm saying, we went to South Mountain up there on the mountain, looking out at the lookout point and all that stuff there. And when we come down, and my beeper went off. Because I was on house arrest. And my parole officer let me hang out. He said I could hang out till 12 o'clock at night because I had been doing so good on my house arrest. So he allowed me to hang out till 12 o'clock. So I figured out how to get a date. So we went up on the South Mountain and was up there just having a good time, just talking, getting to know each other. And then on the way, and then my beautiful went off up here. So I called the parole office to let them know that my beautiful was going off. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if the signal was reaching from up there on the side of the mountain. I don't know if it lost signal or what, you know what I'm saying? But I told them I had my charger with me, I charged it up, and the lady told me all right. So when I come down off the mountain, you know what I'm saying, the police pulled us over. And then when they run a check on my license plate, you know what I'm saying, find out it was me. And then when they pulled me over, they said that they had a warrant for me for introducing contraband to a system. I said, how am I introducing contraband to a system in my neighborhood street? I said, how old is the warrant? They said, a couple of hours old. I said, that don't sound right to me. So when they ran a check and stuff, they found out, you know what I'm saying, that it was a warrant. So they put me in the police car. They went and searched my car and found some half a gram of heroin, I believe. up on this girl's seat, she said it wasn't hers. So they bring, they put it in a bag, they bring it back, they show it to me, right, the police car, I told them it wasn't mine. I said, but I guess, you know what I'm saying, they said it was mine because it was my car, and she said it wasn't hers. So I had to ride that out. So I came back and said, we're here in prison for that, then we're gonna let it out again.
And it did, please.
Saying this is it, was, I was just here to go to ride, she threw a crack back in my car.
Now, did you know the second one, did you know her already, or?
No, I just met her, she had just, she had seen me around, and just asked me if I would give her a ride over there on the west side of the field. The way I was on that.
You just having.
Bad luck.
I don't use the word bad luck, but you just having bad luck with these, picking up these females,
Yeah.
Just didn't, we know, I mean, and this is not important, right, so do you know what happened to them, were they arrested, or it's just all of them, you felt?
They weren't even arrested, I was the only person arrested. And the police seen it at the same time, the woman's last, the police seen her put a bag in my backseat. They, you know what I'm saying, because the wheels were down, and they seen her throw it back there, I didn't see her throw it back there, but they did. And that's why you want to search her side of the car, can we just search her side of the car? I said, I don't care, but I don't, you ain't gonna stop here, you can search the whole car.
But what you're telling this board, sir, and I'm not disagreeing with you by no means, I'm not saying this for argument or discussion, but you're saying to this board that you had no idea that either one of these females had drugs on them when you picked them up, or how long they ended up in the vehicle, sir?
The first one I had no idea, but the second one, I knew she had something. I knew she had something, but I knew she wasn't gonna be in my car at all, I was just gonna drop her butt off over there on Buckeye Road and go on about my deal. But yeah, I knew she had something.
We can't retry you, so that's, let me just say that, so we're not attempting to retry you.
I agree with my clue.
Just trying to get facts, yes, sir. Let me go back to the offense itself that ended up with your being incarcerated for murder and the rest of these charges, sir. Now, I'm trying to get in my mind what really happened. You see that y'all had, you and your fiance waiting, y'all had purchased the house.
Yes.
Y'all have, what, paid cash for that house, sir? Or what happened there? Now, at the original house itself?
The house was remodeled. It was a remodeled house.
Okay.
Fixing up and stucco it and all that stuff. You know what I'm saying? Where it cost us something like $2,500 to move it in and $800 something a month at this time.
And so y'all had paid for the house and.
Yes.
So now what were you trying to get some more money for? Were you going to buy some drugs? What were you trying to get more money for, sir?
I was trying to get more money so I could keep paying my rent, but my job, you know, said that they, when I just got laid off from my job. She was only going to work at the time.
Now what kind of job did you have, sir?
I was working at this steel company.
Okay.
Me and my mother was working together. We was working at this family on the machine operator.
Okay.
I can't even remember the name of the factory.
Where were your fiance working? Where was she working, sir?
I think that Mary was like a nurse, an RN, she was a bitch nurse, I believe. The way I met her, my sister used to babysit her kids.
And you're telling this board, sir, you were there, nobody, I mean, we were not there, but you're telling this board that you had no knowledge that you actually committed that crime, sir. Is that what you're telling this board, sir?
I could not remember. They had to piece it together, sir. They had to piece it together. I read 484 that was happening, you know what I'm saying? I was trying to, I've been piecing stuff together for years, you know what I'm saying? I can't for a life be remember. Only thing I think I remember was somebody grabbing me. I remember somebody grabbing me and a gun going off. That's the only part of the crime that I remember.
So you realize all these years that have passed, you still haven't been able to put it together yet, sir. You don't really know what happened.
Sir, I can only imagine how it went down.
Murder was committed, apparently.
Yes,
there's no question about it. Murder was committed, but you have no recollection at all your involvement or your lack of involvement in that murder, in that crime, sir?
I'm not saying that I wasn't involved in the crime. I'm saying I just don't remember the crime.
Okay.
That's why I admitted to the crime, because I was told by that girl that was with me and by the police that I did commit that crime. Okay, so I feel like I accept my responsibility and take this plea for the crime instead of get death, but they was trying to give me death penalty or 130 years for the crime. And I didn't even know Arizona had the death penalty at the time, but I was only in jail for 5 months. I had made my duty and said, I'm not going to do this time because I obviously did the crime.
Okay, sir.
That's how I feel.
Thank you.
My old society was down there.
Thank you so very much, sir. I really appreciate your honesty in responding to my questions. But thank you, sir, and thank you so very much, Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse.
Question?
I was just going to follow up. I do want to thank Dr. Ryan for following up on that question, because what I wrote down that raised the question is that Mr. Cassim has stated that he referred to Mr. Cronin as the person that had passed, not the person who had killed. And I have very similar line of questions, but I think that Dr. Wright covered that. So thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Awesome.
Mr. Cassim, while Dr. Wright was talking with you, I looked up, and we have copies of the a little bit more detail about the two occasions when you were on home arrest. And on both of these occasions, you talk about the revocation being about something being in your car, that someone, a woman, had thrown in your car. But I also read here that you tested positive for marijuana in 2011. There were red rocks in the vehicle. I guess that would be that this female left there. But the fact that you tested positive for marijuana indicates you were using marijuana, not the female. And in the other revocation, you were also positive for opiates and marijuana on many occasions. It looks like your parole officer was really trying hard to work with you. So it appears that in both cases you were also using drugs, were you not?
No, the opiate was from my pain management doctor. He had me on Percocet from my back.
All right, let me check that.
I had his marijuana, I did. Okay, but he had put me in a rehab plant in one of the American family.
The New Arizona family, uh-huh.
Yeah, New Arizona family, he had put me in that for the marijuana thing. But they only, pain management had me on Percocet.
Okay, the positives for marijuana were on April 25th, May 12th, June 14th. So it appeared it was an ongoing thing. It was not just at one time.
Okay, the first two times was I smoked some weed. And the second time, it was a dirty, but it was lower. It was lower. The score of it was lower. It was going down from the first time.
Okay.
The third time was, I smoked some weed.
Okay. I'm just curious that the way you've explained it to us is that you were violated because of something somebody else did. But it's really...
New Charles.
Right.
New Charles is some.
But that's all you mentioned to us, was that some female was in your car and left drug paraphernalia. It slipped your mind that you had also used THC in both instances, and that would have factored into the decision too. So I'm just thinking about that as well. And I'm just curious why you didn't mention that to us before.
I'm sorry, I'm trying to focus on the charge that I received.
Okay. All right, sir. Any other questions from board members? Okay, Mr. Cousin, I'm going to ask your supporters to come up and talk if they would like to.
Is there any way, he's supposed to have my cousin Troy Simmons to talk on the phone?
Oh, we didn't.
Well, I have that, but if you have a phone number, we'll try.
Okay, yeah, because he has to go into a meeting at 11.
Okay, well, we didn't.
We didn't get.
We didn't get it, apparently.
We didn't get the call.
What's the number?
His number is. His number is 1-813.
1-813.
813.
503.
503.
5239.
5239.
Yes.
And what's his name?
Troy Simmons.
Troy.
First cousin.
Okay, thank you. And who is he now? Who's his?
He's our first cousin.
Your first cousin, okay. Well, this will come to the phone. Now, we're sorry we didn't get that message.
Hello?
Yes, may I speak with Mr. Troy Simmons, please?
This is him.
Yes, this is the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency. It's understanding that you wish to participate in the parole hearing for your cousin, so you will mark that, sir?
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Okay, so the Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse is leading the hearing at this time, so she will call on you at the appropriate time, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Now, Mr. Simmons?
Yes.
We understand you need to go into a meeting very soon. Is that true?
Yes, that's correct.
So we're at a point, we didn't realize that you, we haven't been informed that you wanted to be involved. So we're partway through the hearing, but we're at a point where we would listen to anything that you wanted to present to the board, and then you can stay as long as you can possibly stay before you have to go to your meeting.
Okay, well, I appreciate that.
Please start with stating your name, and then what would you like the board to know?
You said state my name?
Yes, please.
Okay, yeah, my name is Troy Simmons. Mustafa is my first cousin. And what I really wanted to just say is that, you know, we've been involved in some of these hearings in the past, and I understand, you know, really from both sides of this, you know, obviously he committed some crimes in the past that were very serious crimes. And I think where we're at today is we're trying to understand how we can kind of get the wheels of justice rolling again, because it seems like it's at a standstill. My understanding is there's some, there's a pending case that you know, he's kind of being held for, and until that case even gets, you know, from the starting line, there's really no path forward to get him out, you know, of that situation. I had a conversation with him last week, and we discussed, you know, really the progress that he's made. You know, a couple things I can say about Mustafa. The action that he took, you know, years ago is not really a reflection of who he was even then and who he was with today. I think that, you know, his involvement with some drugs back then is really what caused him to end up in this situation. I know that he served a number of years, you know, and rightfully so. I mean, I don't take away, you know, what he did. And I know that the family of the victim, you know, obviously probably feel the same way. I do, however, believe that, you know, at some point in time, you have to move forward and you have to give people a second chance. Now, I also know that in the past, you know, he has been granted, I think parole is what you would call it. He's been granted parole. He's been out. When he did come out, he made some positive impacts with the family. He was doing the right things, and my understanding is he just got caught up in some things with some, you know, former friends that he probably shouldn't have been hanging around with. I can tell you from my conversation last week, I'm very confident in, you know, with the things that he's doing and the steps that he's taking to kind of, you know, get himself in a better position so that when we are in these hearings, you know, you all will be able to kind of see the progress that's been made. I think that, you know, the issue in the past has been, you know, some of the use of the drugs and things of that nature. I think he's really cleaned himself up, you know, from that time, and he's trying to move forward. And I guess the thing that I would ask is just, you know, at what point can we move forward? Can we get the Wheels of Justice back moving so that he can at least get the second pending case, you know, in the forefront and get going on that one? I think what happens a lot of times is people end up in the system, and once you end up in the system, it's hard to get out. You know, it's hard to get out, even though you're making progress and even though you have the support of your family, the love of your family, you know, you kind of get caught up. And what we're trying to do is just get him out of that situation because, as I'm sure all of you know, prison is not a good place, you know, to be as far as moving forward to life. And there's a lot of things that you can do in prison that can help you as far as some of the courses that you could take and things of this nature. But until you are actually free and out, you know, and back in society, you can't really apply those things. One of the conversations that we had last week was about, you know, what he would be doing, you know, after he does get out. And one of the things that I think he would do an excellent job at is really counseling, you know, counseling young kids and counseling other folks that have been, you know, maybe put in the system, maybe not as long as he's been in the system. But I think that he would make an excellent counselor because, A, he's very intelligent. B, obviously, he's lived through it. He's had the experiences of being in the system for a number of years. But also, C, because I think he has a good heart. I truly believe that, you know, he is someone that can be beneficial if he's put in the right situation and if he's able to gain his freedom. So really, what I just wanted to say today is, you know, I just wanted to speak on his behalf. I think that you can see by the people in the room, he has a loving family. I wish I could have been there. Unfortunately, I'm in Seattle today, so I couldn't make it. But support is there. And it's just a matter of giving him an opportunity to finally kind of get beyond some of the things that he's done in his past and really, you know, clean up his act as he has, get away from the drugs, all that sort of stuff, and let's get him back to being a productive member of society. But I do think that he can play a valuable role in helping other people, other young, you know, Black Americans and other folks kind of stay away from the criminal justice system, because I think once you get in, it's very, very hard to get out.
Okay, so can I ask you, you talk about a pending case, but are you referring to the consecutive sentence that he's got? I'm not sure what you mean by a pending case.
That's what he's talking about.
I thought from my conversation with him last week that there was some case that was kind of pending, and he was that case had to get started. I could be inaccurate in that. Maybe okay. I understood it wrong. But I thought that there was something that had to do with that something that came up after his original conviction.
Right, and he's got an additional sentence to serve for which he's been convicted, so it's not pending.
That's what it is. I guess the thing is he hasn't been able to start serving that sentence.
Right. And the hearing today would be for parole to that sentence, and then he would serve that sentence, and then he would revert back to, because he's got a life sentence on the murder, he would revert back to that once the 4.5-year narcotic drug sentence has been served.
Okay, right. That's exactly what it was.
Okay.
He hasn't been able to start serving that one. I'm sorry.
I was just concerned that he had some sort of pending court action, but there's nothing.
Oh, no.
Pending. Okay, good.
No, he has nothing in addition. My mistake on misrepresenting that.
Thank you, sir. Let me see if fellow board members have questions for you. No questions? Okay, Mr. Simmons, thank you. And if you need to go, just go, and you can stay as long as you need to, and we'll just continue. We're about to ask Ms. Simmons and Ms. Gillespie to also speak if they want to.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. I don't know which one of you wants to... Thank you. Good morning, and welcome. And please state your name for the record.
My name is Julia Gillespie.
Thank you.
And I am Mustafa Kazim's sister. And I would just like to say moving forward, I would just like the board to consider Mustafa. He's been back in the prison system. When did he go back in, like 2012, 13? Was it 12?
12.
Okay, he's been back since 6 years now, and he had that sentence to do 4.5 years for the conviction of drugs. And so he's done 6 years, and we just like, you know, I do believe my brother has cleaned up and staying off the drugs and getting himself prepared, you know, for society once he can start the sentence, where he's really basically already been done that 4.5 years if he could just only start it, you know. I know he do have a lifetime parole, and it's just a big price to pay when you come and you get a chance and you make, you know, made another mistake, I won't say, unfortunate situation that happened to him. I just really do truly believe that my brother is ready to come out of there and just be with family, and he have a great support system. Many of our family members, you know, love him to death, but we just want to see him prevail naturally, and by him doing these programs in prison and everything, proves to us that, you know, he wants to come out and be successful and memorable to the community and society. And he would be a great mentor. And he also does barbering, and, you know, I just want to say that I wish that you guys would consider him moving forward to doing his sentence. Okay. 4.5 years.
All right, thank you. Let me see if my fellow board members have questions for you. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Ms. Simmons?
Good morning.
State your name, please.
Janice Simmons.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I'm Mustafa's mother. And the reason why I want to say is that since he did 6 years, and then if he did 4 more years, that's 10 years. And he was supposed to do 4.5 years, but I know you guys had a chance to, you know, give it to him whenever. He had to do the tail before he does the 4.5 years, but we've been back 3 times for you to start the 4.5. So I was wondering if maybe you could start that, and then he could do the 4.5 years, then he'll be out, and I'll be still alive, I hope.
All right. Anything else? Any questions from the board members? Thank you so much for coming today.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Kazim.
Yes, ma'am.
We are coming toward the end of your hearing, sir, but I want to give you the opportunity to make a final statement, if you'd like to do that, without repeating something you've already said. Is there anything else you thought of while you were listening to testimony and et cetera? What else should the board know?
Yes, ma'am. I signed two sentences because of a young person. You know what I'm saying? And I was willing to try to get out and give back to the society as that where I took from. Because I've done everything that they had to offer me here on a 3-level yard. I've taken design for building 3 times and completed a functional literacy, a thinking street grant, moderate text. I got my commercial driver's license. I took cement finishing and completed that. I got my GED back in 93. You know what I'm saying? And they're starting a mentorship program over here in Winchester.
And I'm trying to get into that because I know that I could be, because I talk to these people in the yard, try to show them what I do, where I make my mistakes at. And they seem to listen to me. I try to show them that I do where they can get money or try to find a job that you like going that way, you won't mind going to it. You know what I'm saying? They seem to listen to me because they think that I've been through what they're going through. And I'm trying to get off into these programs so I can make myself. So, because they didn't know me whether they know it or not, whether they didn't know me or not, know I'd be helping them. Because it keeps stuff on my mind that's positive. And I would like to give that back. I would like to give back. But I know that I'm taking a life, I like to give life back to people that that's probably going the same road that I was on. You know? I just need another chance to do it. And this morning I was going to get back into vocational school when I got out also. But I was going to a vocational school before I got locked up the second time. But they had a 9-1 waiting list and I got locked up before the 9 months was up.
That was taking a week of class.
Because it was hard for me to find employment when I was out. Because they tell me it was a lot of jobs for ex-convicts, but there's a certain ex-convict they don't hire, and a certain gang they want. Because I tried all of the places, the Amazon, the Dairy, Shamrock, all the places. And if you get a robbery and murder on your record, they ain't too much going to hire. So I was doing day labor. But I was trying to make that work for me. I just need another chance that I know I can be a better person. Because I'm working hard at being a better person. And I need to be that example for my kids and my grandkids. And great-grandkids. I got them now. Thank you.
Okay, sir. Thank you very much for your statement. Before we move on, I also want to mention, just for the record, that we have a letter from the Maricopa County Attorney's Office dated June 25th, 2018. And this letter just states that our office's position that they object to any possible release of Mr. Kazim, but I wanted to get that on the record. So Mr. Kazim, you've been here before, and you know that the board goes into discussion, and then we do our discussion in public. We don't discuss behind closed doors. So we'll do that now, and we'll be right back with you, sir. Just ask that you remain on the phone and remain silent. We'll be right back with you. Okay, the board is now in discussion. Mr. Kazim is an individual who makes no bones about the fact that he has been involved in drugs. And he says his prison discipline history was pretty much drug-related. He's got many convictions, narcotic or drug conviction, actually, and armed robberies that were probably committed around drugs. He has been granted home arrest on two previous occasions, and on both of those occasions, he was using drugs and also allowed someone in his car who left paraphernalia. According to him, and in one of those cases, he wound up getting a second conviction of 4.5 years for narcotic drugs while on supervised arrest. He was also on probation at the time he committed the murder and was using drugs that day. So he is truly a man whose life has been affected by drugs. He has a very supportive family. It sounds like he would definitely be something that would work in his favor. But he does have to learn to stay away from the people, such as the two females who were in his car and caused problems for him. I am concerned that he was out on release and violated both times relating to drugs. And drugs is the theme. I am not sure that I'm convinced at this point. I think he's moving in the right direction. He's certainly taken some very good coursework, Design for Living, Thinking Straight, and participating in NA and AA, very important. And I also appreciate very much his, and I wrote down almost his exact words, he wants to give back. He says, I want to give back what I took away. And I think that's a very admirable thing, and he probably would be pretty good at it because he's a very articulate man. He's very intelligent. So I'll open the discussion with that and look for thoughts from fellow board members.
I agree.
Okay. So no further input from fellow board members? Okay, I'm going to make a motion then that we deny 412B and 411, which is absolute discharge. And that is my motion.
Second.
Agree.
Okay, seconded by... And Mr. Mann?
So,
you agreed?
Yeah, well, we said it the same.
Oh, I'm sorry, I just didn't hear it. I'm sorry.
On a meeting, it was over the same time.
You're in a partnership there, okay. All right, and the date of the crime, because of the date of the crime, there will be no set-off, so it'll be another six months. And the types of denial would be the full to consecutive and the four, the absolute discharge. The reasons for the denial, serious and violent offense, loss of human life, trauma to the victim, serious bodily injury, violated previous probation parole, specifically by being on probation at the time of the offense, and the two home arrest violations. History of continued substance abuse. I'm definitely not going to check no release plan and no family or community support because he does have that. He has that. And he's done a good amount of programming, so I will not check that one as well. Any other reasons for denial? Okay, back to you, Mr. Kazim. You heard the board's discussion. The board has voted to deny parole to your consecutive sentence, sir. We do like what we're hearing as far as your progress. We think you're on the right track. Moving on that way. Continue to program, and we'll see you in about 6 months. The Department of Corrections will certify you again in about 6 months. And you'll come before the board again, sir. But thank you so much for your participation today. Thank you, Mr. Simmons, and Ms. Simmons and Ms. Gillespie. We appreciate your participation today. And your hearing is concluded, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.